The following is a Learfield presentation of the Vanderbilt Sports Network. Commodore Hour is on the air. Over the next hour, we'll discuss the latest around Vanderbilt athletics and hear from players, coaches, and administrators. Commodore Hour is brought to you by Gupton Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Springfield, Ascend Federal Credit Union, the exclusive credit union of Vanderbilt Athletics, and by the Middle Tennessee Ford dealers, built Ford Tough. Now, here are your hosts, Andrew Allegretta and Kevin Ingram.
Well, good evening and welcome to the Commodore Hour on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield. Andrew Allegretta here with Kevin Ingram. Coming up tonight, Coach Clark Lee joins us at 6:30. In just a few minutes, General Manager Barton Simmons will be on the show. We'll preview Stanford with our keys to the game. But first, Vanderbilt, Kevin, beats Colorado State 24-21. Let's start right there. Really good win for this Vanderbilt program for so many different reasons.
Yeah, I think just any win is something to be celebrated. Of course, it had been a while. It had been since 2019, since Vanderbilt defeated East Tennessee State 2 years ago. And it was really a fun scene after the game to be down close to the locker room, kind of peek my head in and see what all was going on. It was a raucous celebration when that game was over, but just so much to feel good about. Game did not start off very well. It was 14-0, and it felt like Colorado State had a lot of momentum, but Vanderbilt just kind of got things rolling a little bit. You saw Ken Seal start to complete some passes, get some confidence. You score a big touchdown before halftime. You get a big turnover in the second half with the interception by Mahoney, and then a couple more touchdowns, and then it became a putt fest, and then Colorado State ties the game, and then drive and score, and Bolivis hits the big kick. But overall, it was really a fun experience. It was a great stadium, a great atmosphere. Student section maybe had better arms than the quarterbacks did at times, but
lively student section.
Yes, lively is a one way to put it.
Lively is the term.
Yeah, we saw everything from wadded up rally towels to beer cans to bottles of water to pieces of hot dogs on the sideline. I saw a little bit of everything, but their student section, I got to give them credit, man. They were end zone to end zone. It was a fun atmosphere, and it was fun to get out of there with a win late Saturday night / early Sunday morning. It was just fun to experience that and go on the road. It had been a long time since a road victory for this program, too. So it was a good experience, and you try to build off that with Stanford coming up this week.
All right, let's talk about a couple of key moments in that ball game, and then we'll step aside and have Barton Simmons on the program to talk a little bit about this for the program as well as, of course, his role as general manager. But I think you touched on maybe two key plays in this ball game that we really zoned in during the course of our broadcast. I think the first one was that touchdown pass to Chris Pierce at the end of the first half. Boy, did you sense just some life get injected into the program, some comfort from Ken Seals, some rhythm on offense. It was good to see Joey Lynch go back to a place where he coached a season ago and find that rhythm, find the middle of the field, find all that kind of stuff. That was the first real big moment, I think, in this ballgame.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I even asked Coach Lee about that at halftime, and he said absolutely. I mean, it was such a big momentum shift for Vanderbilt to cut the lead in half, to get something on the board. It was the first touchdown of the season, and you just had something to feel good about going to the locker room. You make some adjustments, you come back out, and Vanderbilt played really well after that in the third quarter.
You know, it was good to go back and watch some of the highlights of that play too. I'll talk with Coach Lee about this. You know, Ken has talked at times this preseason, Kevin, about not letting perfection be the enemy of good, and sometimes the fact that he gets a bit robotic throughout the course of his motions. If you go back and look at that highlight, he did a great job of looking off the safety. He was looking left, got the safety to move, opened up that space for Chris Pierce, who has tremendous size, and just put it right on the money. It might have been one of the better throws of the season for Kent, so that was great to see. And then the second one certainly had to be that interception by Jalen Mahoney. It sets up a 53-yard drive capped off by that one-yard touchdown run by Ken Seals. That one was your secondary moment where energy just got injected into this team and gave them the life and the drive to get to victory, I think.
Yeah, you definitely felt that on the sideline with that interception by Mahoney. It was a fantastic play he made on the ball to pick that pass off. But, you know, you look for those big plays in the game, that big turnover that gives you – terrific field position just short of midfield, and Vanderbilt was able to march it down and score, and you know, you get that big turnover, do something with it, and Vanderbilt did right there. That was such a huge play in that game. Another thing that Norman Jordan talked about during the course of the game was how Vanderbilt did a better defensive job as the night went on, maybe better sort of relative when you talk about Trey McBride, their outstanding tight end. He had 8 catches for 114 and scored the touchdown that tied the game toward the end, but as big of a factor as he was early in the game, there was a middle stretch of the game where it felt like our guys did a good job on him.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Look, it wasn't a perfect game. We'll get into some of this stuff. I think Colorado State averaged about 6.5 yards per play, and Vanderbilt averaged about 4.5 yards per play. So Vanderbilt loses that statistic and still wins the game by a field goal. Of course, Colorado State leaves the door open by missing a couple of field goals in this ball game. But tip your cap, head coach Clark Lee gets his very first career victory as a head coach on the same weekend, by the way, that former Vanderbilt quarterback, if I'm not mistaken, David Culley, got his first career head coaching victory as the head coach of the Houston Texans. So it's that nice symmetry right there for both of those guys. Congratulations to Culley, by the way.
Absolutely. They beat Jacksonville. Houston did 37-21. And you talk about a guy with a coaching journey. We were looking at his resume. It's like 14 stops between 1978 and now. You know, from the time he finished up his playing career, he played here at Vanderbilt. He was an assistant coach here for a bit. But, I mean, he has been a little bit of everywhere in college and in pro ball. But now getting that opportunity as full-time head coach of the Houston Texans, that was a neat scene. I saw the video of him in the locker room.
It's great. It's remarkable.
It was cool.
He was recruited to Vanderbilt by Bill Parcells. You talk about his journey going from the 70s to now, and of course the tie-in with Vanderbilt is he was on the staff with the Baltimore Ravens last year, of course, with Jesse Minter. They were on opposite sides of the ball with Minter on defense and Culley on offense, but there's so much symmetry there, so that was great to see. All right, well, let's take a timeout. Let's take a pause here from the McGuckin Center. We'll come back in just a couple of seconds. I will continue our conversation about Colorado State, look forward a little bit to Stanford, and of course we welcome General Manager Barton Simmons to the program, who sits about 8 feet from me right now, smiling, enthusiastic about his opportunity to talk about the Commodores. We'll step aside, come back in just a couple of seconds after this. Welcome back to the Commodore Hour. Andrew Allegretic here with Kevin Ingram live inside the McGuckin Center as we wrap up our conversation. Colorado State, the victory for Vanderbilt 24-21. And pleased to welcome the general manager of Vanderbilt football, Barton Simmons, to the program. First off, have you dusted off your hot takes? The nostalgia of the Cover 3 podcast days, you are so out of this world, and now we have dragged you back into it. Welcome.
That's right. I feel it feels nice. It feels nice to be back in it on the headset once again. I'm not allowed to have many hot takes anymore, though. You know, like, I got to be careful now. You never know what kind of bulletin board material you're throwing out there.
My understanding is you're happy to get rid of the hot takes.
I actually am. Well, look, I mean, I never was a hot take. I was not a hot take smith. You know, I was more of a reasonable take smith, and that might have been why I never rose to stardom in the media game. But I think Coach Lee would be particularly unhappy with me if I started dishing out like the serious heat right now. So I'll try to be as measured as I can be.
Yeah, one thing I've learned in this business, there's no place for the medium take person. You know, you got to be on one extreme or another, it seems like. Yeah, he did a great job for a lot of years. You know, Barton and I, we used to do some high school football games here and there. And I had to stand on a chair whenever we did like the stand-up before the game.
Yeah, I tend to be taller than people expect for some reason. I don't know what that says about me. People think I'm shorter than I am a person, but that's right.
You tweeted a couple of days ago, maybe a couple of weeks ago, that it was the first time in 17 years, I think, that you were back with the team on game day. So take me for you inside the locker room at Colorado State, and you witness your friend Coach Lee gets his first career victory, and for you, something pretty special, too. How would you put that into words?
Well, look, I mean, I think, first of all, How like terrifying to have to say 17 years since you played. It makes me feel old, but it was out there and it's true. And I think the thing that was really special about this past weekend, honestly, is like the contrast to the first weekend, because I was walking in there that first weekend and obviously expected a different result than we got. And I think everyone certainly did, and maybe that's to that's part of the reason why the result came, I think, in part. But there was just there was such shock during and after that game, and then you go to this Colorado State game, and all week, you know, the focus is about that mentality, the resilience, the focus, the, you know, the sideline, the bench, the what happens when we're up against it, and like the way that sideline responded in that Colorado State game was, man, that was just special. And I thought it was so cool to see. And even, look, I mean, personally, I mean, I was trying to be more engaged and involved, and just because I was sitting there a spectator in the first week, and I wasn't giving any energy to that sideline or that team. And so I just think everybody was dialed in a way that really was fun to see. And look, I mean, this team was down 14-0, and Colorado State was, they were having their way in that first quarter and a half or so, and they're really, truthfully, like, there wasn't any flinch in that bench. I mean, every sideline, every interaction was determination, was focus, was and I think that's what showed through at the end, is just the way that team responded.
We were talking about a couple turning points in that game, talking about the touchdown right before halftime, and really a couple stops the defense made before that. They missed some field goals that helped. Come out in the second half, score. Mahoney's interception was huge. What did you see as a couple of turning points in that one?
Well, there was, you know, there was a drive there in that first quarter or that first half as well, where just the defense forced a field goal and it was a miss, right? And I don't even remember where the sequence was in that, but I felt like that really, that generated a lot of energy, just because the defense had to keep going out there, out there, and then they rose up and delivered another stop, and then just felt like the offense responded a little bit, and you could sense it. You could sense Colorado State tensing up a little bit as they weren't able to finish some of those drives. You could sense our offense starting to feel a little bit more comfortable as they kept on getting more chances. And I just kind of, as this first half started to wind down a little bit, I could just sort of feel it, that this thing was starting to flip, even as it was still 14-0. And as that, you know, that scoring drive started to roll, you kind of felt like we were going to get in the end zone before half. And I'm sitting there thinking on the sideline, look, if we can just get in the end zone before halftime, like that sideline on the other side of the ball, other side of the field, is going to be just totally in a bad place. And sure enough, we get in the end zone, and you just thought we were up 14-0, and we're down a touchdown.
Sure.
And I think that's the way they felt. And I just think, you know, you go in there with all this confidence, and I just think that that's a result of this team just staying focused through the adversity early on. And it was, man, like, it was, I think because of, like, if we had won that game 56-0, it would have been amazing. But the way we won that game, I think, made it even more special, particularly considering what happened week one. You know, this is just—it just looked like a different team from a mentality standpoint. There's a lot that this team has got to continue to improve on and clean up, but I thought that was just fun to see, and was really I think in a lot of ways a product of the work that was put in over the course of the week.
All right, so we're going to have to take a break here in a second, but before we do that, to set the table for the next segment that we have with you. I'm going to ask the dummy dumb question. You're the general manager of Vanderbilt football. What does that mean? And so much has been made of the fact that you're in this unique position, I guess partly just because of who you are. What makes this situation unique? So those are the two dummy dumb questions that will set us up to talk Cruton when we return in just a second. So answer that, and then we'll take a break. You first.
So you go before the break.
I want you to set the table.
Okay.
First.
So look, I mean, I think the general manager, basically, I'm responsible for all things personnel. So that means recruiting, that means transfer portal, that means kind of roster management, understanding what our roster is going to look like in the season of 2022 and the season of 2023. Understanding what guys are graduating, understanding who's going to be able to get into grad school, understanding all the sort of the roster management elements of this. And I think a big part of it is kind of being a liaison with our coaching staff to sort of oversee our recruiting process from an evaluation standpoint as well. I come at it from a very macro perspective. I've studied this for a long time. I'm gonna really lean on our coaches' kind of micro expertise, and I'm gonna sort of try to make sure that I have a vision for this program and this roster over the long haul. You know, we're not gonna win this thing by taking short term victories, by getting a highly ranked guy that doesn't fit this place, or by taking a guy that's got a bunch of offers and it looks good on signing day, but how many of those schools are really gonna take the guy? You know, we're gonna find guys that are fits here, and I'm gonna make sure that we're disciplined in that. I'm gonna make sure our coaching staff is disciplined in that, and I'm gonna make sure that we're all aligned in terms of what we are looking for, both positionally and roster wide. I think ultimately, you know, my job is to hold us accountable to what we decide those profiles look like.
All right, so let's take a break. We'll delve in a little bit deeper to Vanderbilt recruiting to the best of our ability in terms of the framework with which we can speak about it. But we'll step aside, come back in just a second, continue our conversation with General Manager Barton Simmons after this on the Commodore Hour, part of the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield.
Saturday night.
Touchdown, Vanderbilt.
The Vanderbilt Commodores return to West End for a non-conference showdown with the Stanford Cardinal. Pregame at 5:30. Kickoff at 7 on 93.3 Classic Hits and the Classic Hits app.
Hey, this is Pecorine, and this is Mashville.
And Rene takes a long, elevated shot, bouncing, and he scores! Into the empty net!
You're listening to the flagship of the Nashville Predators Radio Network, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Welcome back. This is Commodore Hour. Great to have you with us on a nice Monday night in Nashville. Kevin Ingram with Andrew Allegretta. Coming up shortly, we're going to have Coach Clark Lee after the Commodores defeated Colorado State 24-21 in Fort Collins late Saturday night, early Sunday morning. Enjoying our visit with Barton Simmons, the general manager and personnel director for Vanderbilt football. And it's been interesting to see what this area has become in terms of recruiting, isn't it? And I've lived here over 20 years. I know you've been around here a long time, but with so many people moving here, it's become a more fertile recruiting ground than ever for everybody under the sun, not just teams around this region.
All right, so this is going to sound like a humble brag when I say this, so I apologize in advance.
Is this going to be about your football career?
Yeah. So NBA played CPA recently in football, and NBA released a tweet with Ingo Martin is the head coach of CPA. They released a tweet of like a newspaper clipping of the Elite 11 or something from Middle Tennessee from back when Ingle was there, and I was on in the Elite 11 group, and so whatever, it was 11 guys. I think of those 11 guys, you know, I played at Yale. Another guy was on there, Tate Rich, with us. I played at Yale. There's a guy from Memphis that played at Memphis. Like, I think Ingle and maybe two others on that group were Power Five recruits. Like, right now in Middle Tennessee, like, it's probably, I don't know, it's probably 20 Power Five
right.
recruits. And I mean, you couldn't, I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous how much better this area is than just when I grew up, which I guess is getting further and further away, obviously. But, you know, it's a benefit to this program. It's an incredible opportunity for Vanderbilt. And look, I mean, it's also a challenge. I mean, there's a lot of people coming into this area trying to recruit these kids. And so I think it's really important for us to make it a priority, make this area a point of emphasis, to get out, get to know these coaches, get at these high school games, and get the guys that this area produces that can play at this level, because there's a lot of them. They're not all going to be fits at Vanderbilt. But we need to know which ones are, and we don't need to let those guys out of town.
All right, so I've got two questions for you that I'm deeply interested to get the answer on. I'll start with this one. There was a really good piece, I guess specifically on you, that The Athletic did maybe back in April. And one of the comments that you made in that is because you've got so much experience in this territory that you have at least a relative understanding of why misses happen in the recruiting process. And I bring that up because I think as Coach Lee has talked, as so many people have talked, part of the recruiting philosophy for Vanderbilt is you're not going to swing at the five-star kid, right? You're going to get the kid that people might miss on, that Vanderbilt is better at developing, mm-hmm. and turn them into a star.
Yeah.
So here's the question. Why do misses happen?
Yeah. Well, I think they happen for a lot of reasons, and one thing that we're doing here right now, we've done and we're going to continue to do. I mean, one of the first things we did in the spring when I got here was we did a deep dive, basically spelling out every player since the last 15 years or so that's been a hit. We defined hit, whatever that means, right? We set a definition for hit and identified who have been hits. We set a definition for failure and identified who's been a failure. Obviously, there's a big cross-section of people that are neither a hit nor a miss. But in determining who are the hits and who are the misses, you create a profile where you identify, all right, where are these guys from? What's their height and weight? You know, positionally, what's their profile look like? When did they commit? Did they decommit? What offers did they have? How many offers did they have? And when you compare that to the misses and you create this contrast, you're able to understand, like, well, okay, like every tight end that's, you know, the average distance that a tight end of the misses are 700 miles away, and the average distance of the tight ends that have been hits here are, you know, 100. And so, okay, well, maybe we shouldn't be trying to pull our tight ends from, you know, the Pacific Northwest. So it's like, and it's just trying to understand. And I think what it nails down is this understanding of where Vanderbilt's been successful. Vanderbilt's been successful in getting guys like Zach Stacy, getting guys like Jordan Matthews, guys like Earl Bennett, frankly, who are, you know, in our footprint in Alabama, in Tennessee, and getting guys that maybe, not that they're unknown, but they don't have the offers from everyone in the country. And they come in and they understand the value of this place, and we're able to develop those guys up. And look, at some point, when we're winning the way we know we're going to, when we're playing in SEC championship games, then, you know, then that net can expand, the profile can broaden. But let's be realistic about, you know, who's going to pick this place right now, and dig in on those guys and get them here and then develop them, because that's ultimately, like, the only way this place is going to be successful is not because we're going to be a great recruiting program. We got to do that, obviously. But we're going to be successful because we're a great developmental program. And that's like the thing that's most energizing for me, is the idea that I know that my job is going to be like one of the easiest jobs in the building, because I know that when we target a guy, we bring the right guys in, we deliver them to this coaching staff, I'm confident just by watching the staff work and knowing who's in this building that group of players are going to be the best version of themselves. So I'm going to look smart, and I think in the next few years, only because of who these guys are in this building, these coaches in this building, because they're going to pull the best out of these players that I bring them.
All right, so we're almost out of time with you. We're going to have to do a longer conversation at some point in time, because I've got a lot of mechanical questions for you.
Sure.
But this is the last one that I've got. Unfortunately, I do think it needs to be the last one for you tonight, because I'm sure Coach Lee is going to stroll in here shortly.
Well, come on, man. That guy's just...
I mean, if
this
you want to
show,
tell your
isn't
bud,
it? I mean,
he does the media all the time.
Who was here for Coach Lee?
If you want to tell your bud to take a seat...
I got one more question after you're done.
I got to hear him talk all day long. He can sit and listen to me for a little bit.
This is my cynical question.
Okay.
How much of a role does lying play in the recruiting process?
Oh, how about that question?
I'm not talking about it from the Vanderbilt perspective, from the team to player perspective. Uh-huh. I'm talking about you are trying to figure out information, and you've got to figure out who's telling you the truth from a player standpoint, from a coaching standpoint, from a high school standpoint, from a 7-on-7 standpoint. What role does lying play in the recruiting process, and how do you sniff it out through all of your experience in this world over the past 17 years or so?
Well, I don't know about, like, lying. It sounds...
it's
like,
cynical.
Yeah,
I recognize it's a cynical question.
Cynical phrasing, but I think...
people treat recruiting as this seedy world.
Well, look, I think the reality is you have to build relationships with people that... trust you and that you trust, and the more of those relationships that you have that are out there, the more trusted information you can bring in. And that can even mean, look, that can mean coaches on other college staffs. That can mean, help getting information based on testing results from a camp of a coach that trusts you, 7-on-7 coaches, high school coaches. I mean, it's important to have strong relationships with high school coaches. It's important that when we offer a guy, that their high school coach knows that we've offered him and that we've vetted that player out from the high school coach. We work hard at that. We work really hard at being diligent in our vetting process. And that's, look, ultimately at Vanderbilt, one of my sort of things that I'm really careful about and want to really hammer home is we got to limit misses. Like we can, if someone goes somewhere else and becomes a first round draft pick, like I can live with that more than us letting someone into this building that's a miss. Like, and so as long as we get good players across the board, again, I have so much faith in this culture and this coaching staff that there's just going to be a rising tide that lifts all boats in terms of the talent in the building. And so that's a major priority for us.
I'd be lying if I said we don't really have time for my question. My question was going to be about the move of signing day. And I always look forward to that day in February, forward to Christmas. And now it's earlier, at the end of the year. Real quick, and we're up against a break here, but what's that been like for you? And do you think that's been a good thing for football and for coaches in that you can get a guy signed, you don't have to worry for as long? Or what do you think about that whole thing?
Sitting on this side of the table, I'm in favor of it. But I don't know that I necessarily believe it's best for the recruits. I don't know that it necessarily promotes them landing in the best possible opportunity they could have had. A February signing day creates more drama, more suspense, a more frenetic January. I'll be excited. We got a lot of commits right now on the boat, and I'll be excited when those guys get signed in December, and January can be a little stress-free.
Sure.
So from that perspective, look, bring it on. Keep it in February, keep it in December. but the honest answer is, look, I do think that a February signing period presents more opportunities, frankly, for a lot of these guys because it pushes the signing and just their whole recruiting process up. Speeds it up, accelerates it, and in that case, you're missing a few of the senior risers and that kind of thing.
Bart, great to see you. Thanks for the time.
Of course. Thanks, guys.
He's Barton Simmons, General Manager and Personnel Director for Vanderbilt Football. Coming up in a moment, Coach Clark Lee will join us. We'll talk about the big victory against Colorado State. Look ahead a little to Stanford coming up on Saturday at Vanderbilt Stadium. This is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield.
Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on the Game Nashville app.
Welcome back inside the McGugan Center. Andrew Alegretic here with Kevin Engram. We enjoyed our conversation with General Manager Barton Simmons. If you missed anything, don't forget that this broadcast is available in its entirety tomorrow morning, part of our podcast channel called The Anchor. Just search for it, The Anchor, on Apple and Spotify. So if you missed anything from Barton, make sure you check that out. We're pleased to welcome the head coach of Vanderbilt football, Coach Clark Lee. First off, congratulations on your victory back on Saturday. Let's start here. I think I saw that you got a phone call or a FaceTime from David Culley on the plane ride back. I think that's when it was. What, if anything, can you share about the congratulatory words that he passed along, of course, on the same weekend that he got his first career head coaching victory?
Well, first of all, thanks, Andrew. It was a neat moment for me. I mean, Coach Culley obviously is an alum, former football player, and someone who's risen in the coaching ranks, has been a really neat resource for me. And he and I connected over the summer. We actually were able to do it at an alumni event in Houston. And he came out to it. It was special to see him, to meet him in person. We spent a lot of time talking one-on-one, and I was just able to pick his brain and share experiences, right, as first-time head coaches. It's different in the NFL, and he's had so much experience with so many great organizations and great head coaches. But we kind of built a little friendship, and, we were on the flight. We were about to take off, and I couldn't not take a FaceTime from David Culley. And he was actually in the tunnel. I think they were heading into warmups. It just meant a lot. It's there's a former Commodore who's like many gone on to great success, and he's given back. And I think that's part of the mission here, is how we reconnect with that Vanderbilt football community and get all those former players involved. And David obviously is a special one, but meant a lot to me to hear from him. And then I was able to wish him well and celebrate after his win, which was a big win for them. So it was an awesome moment for me and one that I won't forget.
How many text messages did you get after that game?
I think from week one to week two, I think I quadrupled maybe. Look, I mean, there's so many people that want this to be successful, and it's going to be. You know, this is going to take time. It doesn't mean that we can't find a competitive spirit and win in the short term. I mean, that's obviously the goal. We weren't proud of game one at any level, and we, you know, beyond just the result, the competitive spirit, the fighting spirit that we've you know, exemplified in our training. That was the kind of most troubling thing, was what was it about the scoreboard that changed us? And so, you know, we spent a good portion of this past week focusing on the psychology of a dominant competitive mindset. And I was very proud of the way that manifested itself on the field. It wasn't pretty. And, you know, now we got to talk about how we start fast, because I'd rather not dig out of a hole the way we had to. But we did learn that we're capable as long as we carry a belief with us and, you know, again, sustain that fighting spirit, no matter what the scoreboard tells us or no matter, you know, what the short-term outcomes or results are.
All right, so let's dig into this game a little bit. First off, I do believe Ken Seals got the game ball from you after the ball game. I think he throws, I know you've got the statistics in front of you, was it about 250 passing yards? Two touchdowns, no interceptions from Kent. First off, your thoughts on his performance, and then second, obviously Mike Wright does not play in this ball game. What have you guys learned in terms of how you want to balance that position moving forward?
Well, I'll answer your second question first. Mike was available for the game, but he had sustained a shoulder injury in the East Tennessee State game that limited his availability in practice, and you know, particularly in a moment where we were just trying to look to establish some rhythm on offense. I mean, the game situation didn't really present to rotate the quarterbacks. But beyond that, it was, I think, kind of unfair to Mike, who really didn't have a chance to practice in the week. And it's hard to play when you don't practice. And so we didn't want to put him in a position. He was available to play, but we wanted to set him up for success when he's out there. And you know, right around that 2-minute drive at the end of the half, you know, Ken found a rhythm that, you know, that we felt like we could ride into the second half. But, you know, we're expecting Mike to be back this week in practice, and we'll continue to explore how to best, you know, use them as complementary pieces, Ken being the starter. As far as his performance, you know, it was gutsy. I mean, I think there's so much room for him to improve, which is the exciting part. You know, there's a couple of third down conversions into the third, beginning of the fourth quarter, where he misses Cam Johnson twice on little option routes, little out cuts, that he just rushed the throw a little bit. You know, there are things that he's going to be able to do as his game slows down. Still with the vertical deep ball, which we connected on more, and we're able to generate some offense that way with Shep and Chris Pierce. He's got a long way to go. I thought he started slow, and I thought he found a rhythm, and I was really proud of how he battled. And you know, I mean, he in the end, it's him pulling the ball on the power read, and he gets the targeting call on him. He's gutting out a performance there, and you know, he was deserving of that game ball.
Coach Clark Lea is our guest after Vanderbilt wins 24-21 at Colorado State back on Saturday. You know, people will notice the touchdowns or the Jalen Mahoney interception or the field goal at the end, but back in the first half, how big was it to start to get some stops? And the defense, even though Colorado State would drive, got off the field on third down, forced some field goals, they helped out with some misses. To me, that was
that was big in generating some momentum as well, even when the score was still 7-0 or 14-0.
We took some time today to just review on film as a team, you know, some of the moments of turning point, momentum swings. And one of the most important plays to this point in the season was the first field goal miss, both field goal misses, because what you saw was a defense that was taking on some water, but that stood tall in a third down moment and enforced a field goal attempt. And then when it missed, not only did you see them celebrating that moment, you saw the sideline coming out onto the field. Those are huge plays for us. And I was proud to see, you know, all the things we had talked about that fighting spirit kind of coming to fruition there in those attempts. With the defensive performance, I think the most exciting thing for us, and I want to, you know, I don't want this to be, you know, sound cliche, or we found a dominant performance there in the second half, third quarter, and then the majority of the fourth. Obviously, we were disappointed in the drive that led to the tying score, but I thought Jesse and the defensive staff did a great job making adjustments and mixing in some pressures and creating some negative snaps. However, we started to play our base defense with our cleats in the ground, and our rotations were clean. There was a fundamental element to our game that was missing in those first couple drives that, you know, 85 is a great player. I mean, he's going to be a pro, Trey McBride, but he's really good when you don't cover him. And too many times we weren't keyed in the right place. So he, in the first play of the game, he runs, like a naked boot where he crosses the formation. Well, that's an elementary key that a linebacker captures the leverage out to the flat, and he's covered. Well, we didn't do that. And so he's wide open running down the sideline. There's an over that happens later on in that drive. We're in man free, and this is the first drive of the game, and we're too aggressive, have bad eyes at the line of scrimmage, and we cut him loose. And so he's open on an over route. And again, all compliments to him in his game, because he is a fantastic player. The ball he catches on BJ, though, again, structurally, we can be better there. I mean, he's a good player, but I mean, I could have called some of those, and I don't know. We have to look back at my film. I'm not sure.
Well, we've been looking at your film.
I'm not sure I'm running as long as he did, but I'm going to give it my best.
40 yards receiving in your career.
I think he had that in the first drive. So let me take a step back then. No, you know, it's in the end, he's a good player. We have to be, but we can be solid too, and to cover him, to know where he is, to play fundamentally within the structure, allows us to unlock some performance.
We'll step aside, come back in just a couple of seconds, wrap up our conversation with head coach Clark Lynn. Just a second after this on the Commodore Hour, part of the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield.
We are back on the Commodore Hour. Great to have you with us on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, enjoying our conversation with Coach Clark Lee. During the break, he was telling us about a touchdown that might have been from his playing career back in the day. But we certainly can talk about the victory over Colorado State, 24-21, late Saturday night, early Sunday morning, Central Time out in Fort Collins. Mentioned earlier the interception by Jalen Mahoney. To me, that was maybe the biggest play of the game. And you talk about touchdowns and the big field goal at the end, but it just felt like such a momentum changer, gave you great field position and able to do something with it, go down and score.
It was awesome. And you know, that play was available to us in the in week one, and we didn't make it. You know, there were two of them. One I felt like he could have actually taken for a score in that first game, and then one later that I think was Jerkins. You know, those are the plays that you have to make. And when you talk about, you know, a defense needing to have a dominant performance and position the offense for success, I felt like we found life as an offense as the game went on. We found the perimeter passing game. We were extending drives. There are two drives in the third and fourth quarter that we get into that we have good rhythm going. One was the penalty on Gavin's cut that set us back, and then the other one was the pass interference call on the sideline. It was unfortunate, but you know, there was room for us if we could have gotten a second score there, two score lead. I think you have the chance at that point to really separate, and I think that would have been a lot of fun for us. But Mahoney's pick, you know, gets the ball back, gets it back in good position, and then we counterpunched as an offense, and that was, I mean, it was a huge moment for us.
I want to ask you about a couple of guys specifically. Guys that did not play in this ball game and guys that got banged up, just as much as you can tell us. There was, of course, Michael Warden, who goes down late, the center. Any updates on Ben Bresnahan? And then Patrick Smith is someone that we talked about, maybe this being a moment for him because he was part of a commitment to Colorado State initially before he comes here to Vanderbilt. So those three guys specifically.
Michael Warden, good news. There's nothing structural there. You know, he's got a sprain, and sprains can be a challenge. And so, you know, we're going to monitor that. He's kind of day to day. We'll see what he is or isn't able to do early this week and make a decision on his availability for the weekend. Benny Bresnahan, I expect to, I know he's done some full weight bearing running. You know, I expect him to give it a go this week. And hopefully we can fold him back into practice and see if he can be ready to help. That's not to say that he will be available. I think we, you know, that's to be determined, but he's 1 week closer. And then, with Patrick, I mean, the running backs, Coach McKenzie does a great job with them, in practice. And there's a, you know, a competition every day. And, in the first week he finished, you know, second to Ray, and this past week Rocco overtook that position, and so we played two, and it was those two guys. But Patrick, you know, Patrick can still find a way on the field. I mean, he's got a dynamic athleticism. He's got a different gear, and as a young player, I mean, we're going to look for ways to get him out there. So it wasn't necessarily intentional that he didn't play. I thought there was some tough running out there. Thought Ray did a nice job of creating times where and keeping us on schedule when the run wasn't there. Rocco's known for that too. You know, it just wasn't Patrick's night, but he's certainly going to be part of the plan moving forward.
You guys work on situational stuff so much. On that final drive, how much did that training come into play to where when you got into field goal range, you're able to manage the clock and kind of get the ball in the right spot on the field and just have everything lined up to try to make that kick?
It was huge. I think the first touchdown was a defensive timeout to conserve the clock, and then we started a 2 minute drive at the half, and that was that's an exercise we've done, you know, a number of times. At the end of the game, the interesting part of that is you're really we got to a point inside 2 minutes and 10 seconds where we call it a touchdown barrier. So essentially, you're not going to score. You're gonna go down at the 1 yard line and then bleed the clock down to kick with no time remaining. I say it's interesting just because I was, you know, it's something we talk about a lot as a staff. Those kind of unique, nuanced situations, but that had presented in the Toledo game versus Notre Dame in that same day where Toledo scores on a short yardage run. With a minute and a half left, and I think Notre Dame had one timeout remaining. Had the quarterback gone down, they could have bled the clock out and kicked a field goal, you know, short field goal to win it. Notre Dame subsequently, you know, has a 2 minute drive and scores. And so, you know, those situations, we have to be all over that because that's where the winning is found. And I was proud of the way the team understood it. They executed it. Obviously the coaches did as well. And it was, it was good to see. Good experience.
Coach, last question for you, just very quickly. Just want you to touch on Stanford, what fans need to know about the team that's coming to Vanderbilt Stadium on Saturday.
Well, obviously, this has been the standard bearer for, high-level football and high-level academics. And Coach Shaw, as an alum, has done a tremendous job there in building his program. They're a good team. Obviously, they started out and they didn't have the showing they wanted against Kansas State. They decided to go to a quarterback full time and found an offensive rhythm last week on the road in a tough environment against a tough USC team, and so this will be, you know, they're a talented group. They have a true identity on offense. They want to be physical. They have good running backs and big tight ends and big receivers, strong O-line. Defensively, really solid through the middle. They'll be the biggest team we've seen up front at the second level. And so we have to create, you know, we have to be conscious of matchups and build off the progress we've made, but it'll be a challenge. We're excited for it though, to be back home. And, you know, we're going to spend this week practicing in our stadium. I mean, we want to really exercise the psychology around, you know, taking back our stadium. And we weren't proud of our showing the first time in the building. And, you know, we need to be better this weekend. So can we build off the fighting spirit that we showed at Colorado State? Can we find a way to start faster in the game? And we're going to work on that this week in practice. You know, we're not pulling any punches. You know, we want to really have a good showing this weekend against Stanford.
Coach Clark Lee, congratulations again on the win. It was really fun to be a part of, and looking forward to this weekend. Should be cool to be back on the home turf.
It will be. Thanks so much, guys. Good to be with you.
Coach, right. Thank you so much for your time. We'll step aside, come back in just a second, wrap up the Commodore Hour after this on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield. Welcome back. Final couple of seconds here of the Commodore Hour. It's time for the Keys to the Game, brought to you by Gupton, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, and Springfield, serving Middle Tennessee for over 60 years. So Vanderbilt versus Stanford coming up 7 p.m. on Saturday. The keys to the game, Kevin, are?
I think Vanderbilt has to be physical up front and handle the multiple personnel groupings that Stanford's going to put out there. I'm not just saying that because Coach Lee told us that about 30 seconds before we came back from the break.
But there is a good point there because
there are good points there, for sure.
But if you go through their depth chart, it is remarkable the size that Stanford will bring to this game. Consider the fact that their defensive end, Thomas Booker, number 4, as you watch this game, is 6'4", 310. Ooh. That's one of the more sizable defensive ends that you can see. And their defensive tackle, Daylon Wade Perry, 6'4", 340. They've got tremendous physicality and size up the middle. So, point of conversation has been the offensive line trying to open up some space with that zone blocking scheme. They've got a heck of a matchup coming up.
Do you have to, like, put those guys on opposite sides of the aisle on the plane coming out here? I mean, some big dudes, man. Would you say 310 and 340?
310 and 340 on that defensive line for Stanford. Look, as Coach mentioned, not the best start that they wanted, but they got a good win. All right, that'll do it here for the Commodore Hour tonight. Don't forget, you can listen to this as part of the Anchor Podcast, rebroadcast tomorrow morning, and original episodes every Thursday. Our game broadcast starts Saturday at 5:30 across the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Fairfield. It's Vanderbilt at 1-1 and Stanford at 1-1. Looking forward to it, certainly. For Kevin Ingram, for Gus Whittakamp back inside our studios, of course, Barton Simmons and Coach Clark Lee. My name is Andrew Aldegrotta. Thank you so much for listening to the Commodore Hour tonight across the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, and good nights from Nashville.
Thanks for listening to Commodore Hour. Tonight's episode was brought to you by the Middle Tennessee Ford Dealers, built Ford tough. Ascend Federal Credit Union, the exclusive credit union of Vanderbilt Athletics. And by Gupton Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Springfield. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation of the Vanderbilt Sports Network.